So turn in your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, Sound of Silence 2. Last week was Sound of Silence 1. So we will hit chapter 2. Now with tonight's lesson study, we will have set the stage for the study of the rest of the book. You need to understand a little something about how Solomon writes the book. He writes it in three spirals. He goes through the whole spiral once, comes back, goes through it a second time, comes back, goes through it a third time before he hits his final conclusion. That is a Hebrew way of emphasizing the importance of something. The Hebrew language does not have, like, good, better, best. It doesn't have that superlative and comparative and superlative. So to make a point, to emphasize it, they repeat it three times. Holy, holy, holy. Okay? So Solomon is making his point here. This is important. And so he goes through this spiral. And you'll be reading through the book and say, well, he just said that. Well, yeah, he did. But he finished a spiral, came back, finished the next spiral, came back. So just know that as we are studying. All right? All right. Let me just kind of quickly review it on your sheet of paper. Does everybody have a sheet of paper? Okay. On your sheet of paper, I kind of gave you a little summary of what we looked at last week. Just to kind of refresh in your memory, there are four statements that Solomon makes in chapter 1 that provide the foundation, the pillars, so to speak, for his teachings. And we understand something about his teaching. It was not just for then, it is for now, and it'll be for whatever generations come after us. Because the truths here are timeless. Timeless truths. His four statements, just briefly hit them. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That meaning of that word vanity, which he repeats throughout the book, is that the things of this life are transitory. The word vanity in the Hebrew means smoke. It means fog. It's that which disappears, has no permanency. And it has no meaning. It is valueless to life. But sadly, it becomes our idols. These things become our idols. The second phrase, which was found there first in verses 4 and 5, generations come, generations go, sun rises, the sun sets. This was the pagan view of life, sadly enough. It's the pagan view of life in our world today, secularism. The idea that life is an endless circle, goes around and around and around with no purpose. Very good way, a good example. It's back out on the movie scene, The Lion King. Repeated, back out. I haven't seen it. But the song, Circle of Life, is exactly what Solomon is pointing here. This circular view of life. It goes around and around. And there is really, the idea of that is there is no purpose. Life just happens. You die. Next person comes on the scene. Dies. Lives. Dies. Purpose. There is no purpose in life. The third statement. Verse 9. There is nothing new under the sun. Now remember, we're not talking about things, okay? We're talking about people. And the character of people, the nature of people, has not changed since the Garden of Eden. Same today. It's all about me. That was Eve and Adam's issue. It was the issue with Solomon, as he's going to show us. And it's our issue also today. Fourth statement, verse 17 and following in other places, this also is the striving after the wind, chasing the wind, chasing the things of this world, as someone said tonight, every time they used the checkbook this week, they got to thinking, oh, not again. You know, what are the priorities of life? Is what this statement means. What are you chasing in life? And show me your checkbook and your day planner, your calendar, and I'll tell you what your priorities are in life. Now, given that, Solomon now approaches the question, how then shall I live? What is the good life? And if we were to answer that from today, it's no different from Solomon's day. In our world, the secular worldview, which is now becoming more and more increasingly prevalent in our society, is an anti-God, anti-Christian perspective, in that life is viewed as nothing more than living for the moment, living this life. And I'll tell you the one word that really captures that idea, and I bet you hear it, and I've said it, and everyone else has probably said it. It's a little one word, whatever. Whatever. That one word captures this idea of secularism, the idea that it really doesn't matter in life. Now, let me show you just a quick example of how dangerous this is. I walked out of here last Wednesday night, and a young couple stopped me. And they said, Ron, we need to ask you a question. This is what our son is doing with us. Growing up in the church, made a profession of faith, been baptized. Now he's in high school. They shared with me that last year he had a course in logic. And now he's questioning everything about God. It's okay to ask questions. All right? Habakkuk, everyone else asks, all the biblical people ask questions of God. But the questions he's asking, if they're not dealt with and unanswered, and he does not come to a satisfaction, he will be part of that 75% of high school students that walk away when they go to college and turn away from their faith. That's how dangerous this secular viewpoint in our world is today. And Solomon was the first philosopher to bring it out on the scenes for us. And every philosopher since then, from Plato, Socrates, Russell, all of them, modern day philosophers, it's the same issue. It's the same issue. So, let's look at chapter 2. Read with me. And Solomon said to himself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely in how to take hold of folly. Until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their life. In other words, how do I live life? I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I brought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines, 1,000 to be exact. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. And all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all of my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor. Thus, I considered all my activities, which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity, striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Solomon says, I'm going to test myself. And what am I going to test myself with? Pleasure. And I'm going to not refuse anything my eyes desire. In 1976, there was a movie which is now accepted as a science fiction classic movie. It was actually made up, portions of it was made up in Fort Worth. Any of you? It's been a long time since I've been there. The Water Gardens, anyone remember the Water Gardens at Fort Worth? When we were there in seminary, we used to take our children down there and we'd let them climb around on this water garden. There's actually a center point in this movie. The movie's name was Logan's Run. And in Logan's Run, which is a utopian-type movie, the world has been destroyed through war and ecology and bad economics, and the survivors now live in this big domed city, multiple domes, but they're all connected. And they have forgotten the outside world. Their whole life is within this domed city. And they are served by robots, artificial intelligence. You see no evidence of them doing any kind of work. You just see them living. And there's an interesting twist to the movie. They have this, what they call carousel. And in each of their hands, there is a crystal. And when they're born, that crystal activates. And as they grow older, that crystal changes colors. Until finally, one day, it turns red. And they all have to go into this carousel. And then you kind of see them whirling up through the air, and then they're gone. That's it. Unless they are by chance reborn through that incident. Nobody's ever reborn. You want to guess what age that takes place at? Or maybe if you've seen the movie, you know. That's how long life is. But let me tell you what, and if you watch the, anyway. Here's what the statement is made at the beginning of the movie. Mankind lives for pleasure. The society has become nothing but living for pleasure for those 30 years. But you see, Solomon beat him to it. I'm going to test myself with pleasure. That was his whole goal in his life. Now, I want you to just think this through. Here is the richest man of all times, with power over life and death. Imagine what pleasures he could desire and give himself to do. Anybody? Are you aware he is the richest man that's ever lived? You have an idea how much he was worth? $2.2 trillion+. That's a one with 12 zeros. And he says, I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure. And he gives examples of three. The first one is verse 3. I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely. Does anybody see the illogical statement there? Huh? While guiding my wise mindly, I'm going to stimulate my body with all the wine I want. Numerous biblical accounts of the misuse of wine. All goes back to Noah, actually. Probably there was before him, but it's mentioned in Noah's, after the flood, how he planted vineyards, and one day he partook of his vineyards, became intoxicated, was involved in some type of immoral activity, which would bring a curse upon one of his sons. King Xerxes, in the book of Esther, involves himself in a party that lasted over a year. Got rid of his wife out of that. Esther comes into the scene. Daniel, King Belshazzar, loses the Babylonian Empire on the night. You remember this incident with the fingers on the wall, but it was a night in which he brought even the sacred instrument, the sacred vessels from the God's temple to be involved in the party. The wine there. Habakkuk chapter 2 speaks about God's wrath upon those nations and those people who use wine to bring down a society. Even Solomon himself, it's interesting. Remember, he wrote Proverbs early in life, and this is what he says. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to desire strong drink, lest they drink and forget what is decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. Yet he would disregard his own advice. If you'll remember in Walking On, there's a section that deals with Habakkuk's issue of this. The statistics, which are a little bit dated in terms of year, but the fact of the statistics, 86.4% of people ages 18 and over report that they drink. But a new statistic that I just came across, and this one is a new one, literally, 1/5 of adults, an estimated 53 million people in the United States, suffer not from them drinking, but from other people's drinking. Abuse within the home. Accidents on the highway. Financial issues. That's 1 in 5 Americans, adult Americans, suffer the consequences. 97,000 students between the ages of 18 and 24 are victims of alcohol-related sexual assault. And guess what is linked in Scripture? Alcohol and immorality. And Solomon says, I'm going to stimulate my body while my mind is guiding me wisely. How illogical. This wisest man of men. But there's a reason. You see, what the world never shows are the consequences. Watch your athletic programs. Look at all the alcohol advertisements, billboards. But you never see one of the ward in the hospital. You never see one of the divorce courts. You never see one of the child abuse. Pleasure number one. Pleasure number two begins with verse 4 and runs through verse 8. Did anybody by chance, and I'll read the verse 9 as the summary of it. I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. Did you notice two pronouns that were used in those verses 4 through 8 in every sentence? I and myself. So who is the center point of this pleasure that I'm going to name here in just a minute? Who's the center point? Himself. And here are the two pleasures. Accomplishments, accumulation. Read through it. These are the things I accomplished. These are the things I accumulated. More than anyone has ever. It's interesting. He says in verse 10, I want you to notice this contradiction. In verse 10 he says, my heart was pleased because all of my labor, and this was my reward for all of my labor. In other words, this pleasure of all of his accomplishments and all of his accumulations, he viewed that as his reward. But look at the question in verse 2, and we'll come back to it later, but look at it right now. What does it accomplish? In verse 11, he gives us his answer. Then I considered all my activities, all my pleasures, which my hands had done, and the labor which I exerted, and behold, it was all what? Vanity, meaninglessness. It was all a striving after the wind. Remember the comment, the cartoon last week, chasing the almighty dollar? And there was no profit under the sun. Now you can take the word profit from an economic standpoint if you choose. It fits. He's literally saying all of this stuff that I've done and all of this accumulations and accomplishments, it has no monetary value whatsoever. And here's a man worth $2.2 trillion. How can he say that? Because he came to realize that it wasn't profitable to his life as a person. The fourth pleasure. Verse 12. So I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man or with the fool. Inasmuch as in the coming days, all will be forgotten. And how the wise man and the fool alike die. The book of 1 Kings, speaking of Solomon, after he had been visited by the queen of Sheba and other many kings, it says this. So King Solomon became greater than all the kings of the earth in riches and in wisdom. I magnified and increased wisdom more than all before me. And they need to understand something. The word wisdom has two meanings. In the Hebrew, the word wisdom does not mean intellectual IQ. It does not mean having all the academic degrees that you can earn. Wisdom means to have the skills to navigate life wisely. It's like the captain of a ship in the middle of a storm. How does he navigate that ship to get through the storm without capsizing the ship? Any of you have done any sailing, you know the answer to that. You sail that boat not across the waves, but through the waves. And when we face the storms of life, which we face on a daily basis, the issues of life, how do we deal with them? That's what the word wisdom conveys in the book in the Bible. And of course, his book of Proverbs is all of that wisdom. You see, this book does not teach math, it doesn't teach physics, it doesn't teach science. But it teaches us how to live life. And you see, it's wisdom is not learned in a classroom. Here's how it's learned. Proverbs 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Job 28:28. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To depart from evil is misunderstanding. Psalms 111, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do His commandments. See, if you look at verse 14 in chapter 2 again, he said, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Listen to this out of Proverbs. Solomon writing again, earlier in life. Listen to what he writes. My son, if you will receive my sayings and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasure, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice, and he preserves the ways of his godly ones. Then you will discern righteousness and justice and equity and every good course, for wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will guard you. Understanding will watch over you to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who seeks perverse things, from those who leave the path of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. The wise person walks in light. The foolish person walks in darkness. That might help you try to understand what's going on in America today. Yes, ma'am. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 14. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Let me show you how this came to point historically. Germany was viewed as the most intellectual nation of its time in the early parts of the 1900s. Science, math, literature, theology. And yet it fell to darkness. All because they turned to the philosophies of the world. The main one being nihilism. But nihilism flowed out of naturalism, the view that we can know all things by observing it with our eyes through science. I'll submit to you, we're headed on the same path. Viewing that technology is our salvation. Read the history books. they tell you otherwise. Because notice what he says in verses 14 through 16. He says, first off, what is the fate of the wise person and the foolish person? It's the same. We all die. And notice also, it is meaningless. He said, it is vanity. It is smoke and mirrors. Verse 16, he says, no lasting remembrance of the wise man or the fool will occur. And then ultimately, death. And what are you going to take with you? You see, you're not going to take pleasures, and you're not going to take accomplishments and accumulations, nor wisdom. The only thing we'll take with us is the character and the nature of God. Now in verse 2, he asks a question. What do all these pleasures accomplish? 1983, a young woman around the age of 21 to 22, somewhere in there. Name was Ann Lennox. She wrote a song entitled Sweet Dreams. I don't know if any of you remember that from your days. But this is the stanza that is significant in her song. Sweet dreams are made of this. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. And this is what she wrote later about why she wrote the song. The song was an expression of how I felt. Hopeless and nihilistic. Nihilistic, you know, means nothing. But look at verse 17, chapter 2. And Solomon writes, so I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and a striving after the wind. I hated life. You remember a song by the Rolling Stones? I can't get no satisfaction. And that's all the song said. I can't get no satisfaction because I try and I try and I try and I try and I can't get no satisfaction. That's what Solomon has just said. The work which I have done was grievous to me. No satisfaction. Everything is futility and a striving after the wind. Well, what's his conclusion? Remember, I said he'll go on a spiral and then he'll give a conclusion. Well, let's notice it. It's actually twofold. Now remember, he's trying to answer the question, how do I obtain the good life? How do I live the good life? And to this point, he has defined the good life by pleasures, accomplishments, accumulations, and intellectual knowledge. Take you back to Genesis 3. Here is a man who has everything that is in life we would consider perfect. Riches, wealth, power, everything. But Adam and Eve had that also in the Garden of Eden, in Genesis 1 and 2, in Genesis 2. They had everything. Perfect existence, a utopian existence. Now you know what the word utopia means, don't you? No place. But the Garden of Eden was real, and they had everything that was perfect. But then in their desiring to be like God, They chose to disobey God's ways and to follow man's ways. And what did it lead them to? Eve, pain. Adam, toil. And ultimately, forced away from the presence of God, into darkness, into the wilderness, and ultimately death. Well, notice verse 18. And remember, Eve, pain, Adam, toil, and separation from God and death. Look at verse 18. Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. His pleasures had become his toil. Just as Adam's pleasures had become toil. In verse 19, who knows whether everything I leave to this man who comes after me, will he be a wise man or a foolish man? Yet he will have control over all the fruit for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. I'm going to leave everything that I've poured out my whole life into somebody else, and what kind of a person is he going to be? I don't know. Verse 23. Because all of his days of his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. Solomon says, my pleasures became my toil, which became painful and grievous. I couldn't even sleep at night. And then verse 20. Remember back to this young lady, Ann Lennox. Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor, which I had labored under the sun. Everything he had accomplished and accumulated brought him nothing but despair. Now, he gives an apparent answer in verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. Eat, drink, and be merry. You remember Epicurus? The good life is, he tagged it modest pleasure, but it was through the pleasure that you would obtain peace and stability in life. Eat, drink, and be merry. In other words, enjoy life. And that's the answer that Solomon actually gives here initially. It's interesting, in 1993, another band titled the David Matthew Band changed the words a little bit. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. The title of the song was Tripping Billies. That was the fact that they were tripping on drugs. But the point was, we might as well just eat, drink, and be merry because we're going to die tomorrow. It doesn't mean anything. That's exactly what Solomon has been saying. That all of these things of life have no meaning because I'm going to die. But then Solomon has an insight. Remember, he said his wisdom was with him. He has an insight because he now says this. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without Him? It comes crashing in upon Solomon that all of these things that he has have no meaning unless It is God who is our life. Are those things evil in and of themselves? No. But it's the temptations. And even Jesus used the parable that the road is very narrow and the eye of the camel, the rich man can't get through. Because he depends upon whom? Self. And who are all the pleasures and the accomplishments and the accumulations? Who are they for? Self. And he says, look, guys, otherwise it's all vanity and a striving after the wind. I was out walking early this morning, and a song on the Christian Chase station came over. Just so you know, I don't just listen to anyway. The title of the song, I mean, you got to remember something. All those songs and stuff I'm quoting, that's from another previous life, folks, in my life. No drugs, no. But here was the title of the song. It was the phrase that the singer kept repeating over and over. And I'm thinking about tonight, and here's the song. I've only got one life to live. And the question of the singer is, what kind of a life am I going to live? That's Solomon's question. And he acknowledges that without God, everything else is vanity and a striving and chasing after the wind. Well, Brother Robert will be back next Wednesday. So let me take you to one gigantic leap to chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes. Remember, he's going to go through this cycle three times. We've gone through the first one. He has come to a conclusion to say that, look, without God, but now I want you to hear his final conclusion. Verse 13. The conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God, and keep his commandments. Because this applies to every person. Because God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, rather it is good or evil. Solomon understands that there is only one way to live this one life that we have, and that is to fear God and keep his commandments. Because everything else is going to face his judgment. You know, the Apostle Paul learned from Solomon. You want to look at the New Testament side of this. You go to read chapters 3 of chapters 4 of Philippians. Chapter 3 in the first part, Paul shows how the great things that he had and accomplished in life. You remember that passage? Circumcised the eighth day of the nation of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to the righteousness which in the law, found blameless. Paul was up there on the level with Solomon in his society, in his culture, in his day. But what does he say about all of that that he just made statements about himself? What did he say? Whatever these things were gains to me, I count as loss. They are lost in the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. Everything that I thought was important in this world was rubbish. And then he goes on to say in chapter 4, I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. And I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So the question that I leave you with, do you want to have the good life? Do you want to live the good life? The world has an answer. It's all about things. But God's answer is in Paul's three words, life in Christ. What will your choice be? And oh, by the way, the question is asked every day of your life until God takes us home. So it's not just tonight, in here. It's out there tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. What will your answer be? What will my answer be?